Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Chris, looks like we're going to get at least one more main event run from Shinsuke Nakamura, a somewhat foreshadowed turn on Seth at the end of tonight's Raw. It just felt too good to be true. To have babyfaces winning without incident and heels regrouping and scowling at ringside. Although, yeah, the cover story a bit that this the story here was, can Seth and Cody coexist with Sammy as the mediator? So there was something else going on that if a savvy viewer might think was enough of an angle to kind of close out Raw. Because it's rare they don't have something going on at the end to kind of justify hanging on the shot as long as they did. And Nakamura blindsides Seth, and Nakamura had a little bit of a sinister grin earlier when he volunteered to take Sammy's place in the match. I'm happy to see this, and I'm hopeful we have another great match or two left in Shinsuke. I'm not sure how much WWE fans are going to buy that he's a threat to win Seth's title. I'm not sure that's essential. We're all just kind of looking around after SummerSlam for anyone to be an opponent for Seth. What's your take, Chris, on how this all played out?
Yeah, I think Nakamura was fired up. You know, it is G1 season. He wrestled so many years in New Japan, and so maybe he just knows August is really important. I think Seth needed an opponent, and he needed a heel opponent, and there wasn't really anyone to bring in immediately. So Nakamura, the foreshadowing turn, helped. The only thing for me is that I don't know why he wrestled the whole match. And then, you know, they could have lost, or he could have gotten injured, and he could have never gone to attack Seth. But I guess it worked out in his favor because his team won, and he was able to attack them when they weren't Sammy and Cody weren't looking.
Maybe. Just maybe the idea is that Nakamura felt like Seth and Cody were preoccupied with each other and Sammy was, you know, preoccupied with them. And he felt like, hey, I contributed to this. I saved the day. I volunteered to help you guys out and you guys aren't spending time thanking me or appreciating me. And maybe that was sort of the thing that took him over the brink. Although that sinister grin earlier in the night made it seem like he might've been just waiting for his moment too. But, yes, I get your point. I wonder if that will actually be covered somehow. Not that Nakamura is going to do a long-form promo explaining it. But, you know, overall, I mean, Nakamura looks – he's got a history with WWE fans and, you know, people who know his history going back to New Japan. You know, I think we'll be excited to see him and Seth, you know, produce at least one big main event match, if not more.
Yeah, he came out and got probably one of the louder ovations. I know part of his theme song is so catchy, but the crowd was really into him against Bronson Reed earlier on the show to the point that they started booing Reed more when they thought he might win. So I think that he can be able to muster at least one good match against Seth, though I think everyone in the back of their mind knows he won't win the title.
Yeah, yeah. But he's you know, building a Hall of Fame career in WWE, and the totality of his career certainly justifies that type of conversation and giving him a chance to be sort of the post-major event challenger is probably the right, you know, the peak use of him right now, and it gives Seth a chance to score a win over a legend. What do you think about the undercurrent of issues between Cody and Seth? WWE is doing, a nice job with, and they've done this for a while, like Seth talking about wanting to take on Roman Reigns, but the match not happening. Now you've got Cody and Seth crossing paths. There's some tension. They can team together. As Wade Barrett said, they can coexist for one night, even if they'll never be best friends. They're teasing a match that will eventually happen again without making fans want it to happen right now and creating a detour for it to not seem like the obvious thing that should happen right now. Does this come across as a good way to have kind of tease for a future match, or does it just come across as another excuse to not have Cody actually challenge for the title? Because that is also another thing happening here is that kind of awkwardness of Cody wants to be champion, but the belt he wants is on the other show. And so does he, you know, how do they keep him from, how do they justify him not at least going after this as another prize for his trophy case, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree with the second point. I think they're kind of grasping at straws or struggling to find a real reason. I mean, him and Seth had quite a lengthy feud last year that ended with his torn pec in Hell in the Cell. So they have a reason not to like each other. But it seems they're also preoccupied with Roman in some way and wanting to wrestle for him for the quote-unquote real world title, even though Seth has one. Cody had the distraction of Brock, but that seems to have gone away. And I think they're going to try to find another reason to have him stay away from Seth. And then on Seth's side, he has Nakamura to contend with. But I feel it's kind of filmsy because they already have a rivalry with the title notwithstanding.
What's next for Cody if Seth has Nakamura?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure because the great thing about having Brock Lesnar is he is a force that needs to be reckoned with and can take your attention away. They, Judgment Day, I mean, maybe you could do a – I thought maybe you could do something with him and Finn, but he just beat Finn today, so that doesn't seem to make sense. Damian Priest and Phil Maller seem to be heading towards a feud. I don't know if there's a real – I mean, Cody in his American Nightmare Conquering Hero needs – mountains to climb.
Yeah.
And there are not too many heel mountains on the Raw side right now in WWE.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious if anybody listening has some ideas, you can call or email us and let us know. In fact, let's introduce the show here and give out the phone number and email, and then we'll move on to emails and phone calls from there and talk about more from the show, including a notable LA Knight Miz exchange that I have some things to say about. And I want to get your take too, Chris. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 7th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch, which started as a newsletter and continues on as a newsletter to this day, over 1,800 issues, published weekly since the late 1980s. And then also the website, pwtorch.com, with live TV and pay-per-view and PLE coverage, editorials, special features, breaking news, Keller's Take, editorials, and more. Check it out, pwtorch.com. And also the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our Blue Logo Show, Greg Parks, longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, joining me tomorrow as co-host. And we'll be talking about so much going on this month, already with SummerSlam and much more coming up on the AEW side of things. And certainly some post-SummerSlam developments we'll get into also. So join us for that if you are listening to this show on delay. But it is you're listening to it on a Tuesday. Feel free to email questions or topic suggestions for that flagship, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. And Greg and I might just read your email on the show and address your question or topic. The other voice you hear is a debuting co-host here on the post show, Chris Maitland. He is a long-time PW Torch VIP member, dating back over 23 years, and he is a host of a PW Torch Daily Cast on our great lineup of different shows each day of the week with different themes and topics. Chris, a formal welcome to the co-host chair.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
So tell people about your show and a little bit about your background, since you are a new voice here for our listeners.
Sure. A little bit about myself. I'm a fan who started watching wrestling as a young kid because my parents loved wrestling. They still, my dad is probably the only person I know who watches wrestling every night of the week, still to this day. But back in the 80s, we had cable, and wrestling was on ESPN and a whole bunch of other channels, so that got me into the wrestling bug. I went to college, met some of my closest friends. We became wrestling fans. Two of them are our voices on the Torch, Rich Fan, and Justin McClellan, who I do our daily cast with, and I'll get to him in a moment. And so we host a show called Wrestling Coast to Coast, which is on Thursdays, part of the PW Torch daily cast lineup. We highlight mostly independent wrestling shows. Sometimes we cover NWA, MLW, basically anything but WWE or AEW. We cover a show each week, go over it, kind of talk about what we like and what we don't like. And, we have a lot of fun doing it. We were originally the Ring of Honor show called Honor Speak. I had started writing Ring of Honor reports for the Torch back in 2021. And then Ring of Honor was sold by Sinclair Broadcasting to Tony Khan. We were kind of not sure what we wanted to do, so we switched to an independent wrestling show. We're having a lot of fun doing that. We have different topics every week, and unlike pretty much most wrestling shows, we get to pick our own shows. So we typically like what we do,
yes,
just because we've kind of chosen beforehand where we want to go. But, yeah, so Justin McClellan, one of my longtime friends. We met the first month of college, and he and I host that together. And as I said, Rich Fan, who I met the first day of college, quite the presence here on the Torch.
That's awesome. So like you said, you are how did you phrase it regarding Rich and the Torch? You want full credit? Was that the right word?
Well, you know, I was a lapsed fan, and I was at an outlet in Albany, New York, back in 2011, and Rich called me up, and he said, you need to start watching wrestling again because of the CM Punk promo. And I did.
Yep.
And then a few weeks later, I resubscribed to The Torch, and I told Rich, hey, you really should subscribe to Pro Wrestling Torch. It's a newsletter I was a part of back in the day. And, yeah, Rich being Rich, he took it to a level that I would have never imagined. but I was the first one that I get to tell him that he should connect with The Torch.
You changed the course of human history, Chris.
I'm sorry. All I can do at this point is apologize.
No. All right. I will thank you for changing the course of human history, or Torch history at least. All right. So welcome. It's great. Check out his show. Search PW Torch in your podcast app, and you'll see the PW Torch Daily Cast logo pop up, and with a bunch of different colors on it representing all the different topics and shows on the lineup. And it's free to subscribe to. You might also see the PW Torch charcoal colored logo. There, I got it. It should pop up also. That is our VIP free sample feed. And so you can subscribe to that. And on occasion, we put up free samples of VIP shows. And you can also upgrade to the full VIP lineup using your Apple account with just a simple, fingerprint touch to the side of your phone. And you're in and hearing all of our shows with the ads and plugs removed, the free ones, and then also all the VIP exclusive ones, which included, by the way, this past weekend's SummerSlam post-show roundtable with the aforementioned Rich Fan and Todd Martin joining me for about an hour to review SummerSlam. You can join us right now. Give us a call. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. We are opening up the phone lines to you, so take advantage of it. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That will flag you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Speaking of callers, it's been a while. Let's bring Chris from Oklahoma on first. Chris, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about tonight's episode?
Well, I have just a random question, if you don't mind. It's not so much about tonight's show, but it's about the whole Bloodline thing with everyone talking about, did he jump the shark? Did they jump the shark, the whole Bloodline thing? And I saw a post on Facebook, and it said, the real star of the Bloodline story, and it had a picture of Sami Zayn. Do you think that's really, in your guys' opinion, do you think that's honestly really the truth, in your opinion? Because as much as Roman Reigns gets all the credit, a lot of it was Sami. And Sami was a big chunk of it. And without him, they're just kind of floundering in no man's land.
All right. So, yeah, there was a decent amount of attention paid to that tonight on Raw in terms of the video package and some Colin Barrett analysis. So we can cover that here on the Raw Post Show a little bit. And obviously, Sami, part of Raw tonight in a different place other than when he was red hot in the Bloodline. I still think they're using him well, and I don't think there's any shame in not sustaining where he was earlier this year. That would have been, you know, pretty close to impossible. So I don't think people should be lamenting the fact that Sammy's not, the centerpiece act red hot as he was earlier in the year. There's going to be an ebb and flow to people peaking, and then it's going to subside as things rotate in and out. And he's still in a good spot and still popular and standing in between two of the biggest stars on Raw as a negotiator trying to bring two forces together who he gets along with but aren't getting along. So I'm fine with where Sami is, but I don't think Sami's, at this point, Chris, a centerpiece part of Raw and hasn't been, but I've enjoyed what he's done with Kevin Owens. But I think there's been some great Bloodline moments before Sami, And I think there's been some great ones since Sammy. And I think there's probably some people pushing back hard against Chris from Oklahoma's comments that, you know, Sammy is the reason they're red hot. I think the bloodline peaked with Sammy. But I don't think it's been a big drop off, even if you're a little down on what happened Saturday night, as some people are, in terms of the length and pace of the match, and also just, you know, another Jimmy turn. But I'm going to give them a chance on Friday to kind of show me what they have in mind before I evaluate it too forcefully. And obviously, Roman and Heyman and Solo and Jimmy and Jay have all had great performances. So I don't, you know, I mean, you can go on social media and find anybody express, you can find an almost every opinion expressed by somebody. I don't put a lot into that just in and of itself, but I think some people probably do feel the way that person Chris is referencing do. So Chris, your thoughts on co-host Chris, your thoughts on that Sammy's role and where we are kind of now relative to them.
Well, I think Sammy's in a tough spot. One, because his tag team partner is injured, so he's one half of a tag team champions without a partner, but also a typical wrestling issue is that they don't have opponents. And I think part of this is a lack of WWE building up a tag team division for several years. There was an obvious issue between Sammy, Kevin Owens, and the Usos, but when that was resolved, there wasn't a natural fit for them to go. I think they struggled with that alongside with Kevin Owens' injury. With the bloodline itself, I don't agree that it peaked with Sammy. Clearly, there was a segment a few weeks ago that did involve Sami Zayn that had the highest ratings in years, and so that needs to be noted, as well as the issue between Jey Uso and Roman Reigns predates Sammy. That's kind of the beginning of the bloodline when Jimmy was injured and the matches they had, I believe, in 2020. So I think people are conflating maybe the match quality or perhaps being annoyed that a brother turned on his brother and using that as an excuse to say that the entire angle has peaked when 3 or 4 weeks ago, whenever the trial of Roman Reigns was, that was the highest rated wrestling segment in years that didn't involve Sami Zayn. I think I hate being the person that says let it play out, because I think that's kind of ridiculous at times, but this is one time I think we should do that, because there's a natural feud or natural animosity between the brothers that may not involve Roman. Is my prediction is Jimmy might say, you know, why should Jay be the world champion when I could be the world champion? Because he's technically the older brother, and there's a way that they can go on outside of Roman. And I'm looking forward to Friday and see if that's the role that they take.
Expand on that a little bit in terms of what you hope to hear from Jimmy in particular, that takes into account what's gone on. And is there something Jay has done wrong, or does this just kind of go back to the segment where it was revealed that Jimmy was working against Jay, and Jay just sort of blew past that and decided to side with Jimmy over Roman? Is that kind of rewinding to that moment enough to explain that really, you know, while Jay's been torn and sided with his brother, Jimmy has also been torn, but all along his inclination has been to side with Roman? Is that enough, or has something happened since then that will also further justify, in the eyes of viewers, that this wasn't just some arbitrary latest twist in a storyline to add some fuel to propel it forward, but there actually is something logical to explain why Jimmy would act the way that he did?
Yeah, I think they need more than just what happened a few weeks ago. I mean, there have been several segments over the course of the several years of the bloodline feud where they have been at odds. And I think for me, and I guess in my opinion, what it would work was that, you know, we have always been together and you went off on your own and you're trying to be world champion and not focusing on our team. And how can you do something that I've never done? Why do you think that you're a better single star than me? Something of that kind of realm, mm-hmm. I think could work, because they can take it outside of Roman with that. I think people really wanted Jay to get his title shot. He's had it. I don't think he's going to get another one. They need to kind of move away from that. And I think the brother animosity for maybe the Jimmy being jealous of Jay, or Jimmy thinking he's better than Jay and not wanting Jay to get to a place that he never got, I think that explaining that and fleshing that out will probably be the best way to go.
Yeah, and fans don't have to side with Jimmy. They just have to believe that Jimmy believes his own story, that that's enough to justify it. And I think that would be enough. You know, fans are like, well, that's not a good excuse to sack your brother. But as long as Jimmy's convincing in the way he expresses it, I think that might be, you know, it's likely where he goes in terms of justifying his actions to cost Jay the match. Chris Mokolomo, go back to you. Any follow-up on that, or do you want to bring something else up from tonight's show?
One more thing, and I was just curious, what are your thoughts on Rhea Ripley and the way they treated her tonight, especially with the beatdown from Raquel Rodriguez? Did it make her look weaker than, you know, than she needed to be? Or was it just the way I was looking at it? Okay, yeah, Raquel got revenge, and yeah, Raquel's fishing in for this match, but, I mean, this is honestly one of the worst, you know, championship reigns I've seen in a while for, you know, women's division. But I just hope that Raquel doesn't – I'm honestly hoping Raquel doesn't win it, and that's saying a lot because I can't think of a time where anyone ever, you know, competed against in the women's where I thought, okay, they could win it. But, I mean, it just seems to Rhea Ripley, they're just kind of, I don't know, not reaching her peak, you know. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, so the last scene of Ripley was being held back and yelling and needing to be held back. That I don't think that made her look weak. I mean, she was jumped from behind and beaten down. And let me ask you as a follow-up caller, Chris, what do you think in particular made her look weak? And what could they have tweaked if they wanted to forge the storyline?
Well, I mean, as in, yeah, she did get jumped. But the scene I was thinking of, there was a scene when she was down and literally covering her head like, you know, an MMA fighter would, you know, trying to cover it, and it just seemed like, okay, wait a minute, they're making it look like she's, you know, she's not defending, she's trying to defend herself, but can't, against Raquel's, you know, Raquel's onslaught,
yeah.
And Raquel gets jumped. Then I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, they're going to have her come back and, you know, be, you know, attacked, but maybe it's just the way they presented her overall.
Sure.
As you
yeah.
see more of her with Dom, then you do see her as a champion. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah. No. I'm glad that you clarified that. Co-host Chris, what do you think of the point caller Chris is making?
I think with Rhea, WWE's in kind of a tough spot with sort of her being the peacemaker of the Judgment Day, or at least between Priest and Balor. He doesn't really have an opportunity to focus on her as the champion. Also, I think because that they weren't having the match on at SummerSlam, they kind of put that to the side. Also, which is, well, want to be very clear, not advocating in any way for men versus women violence. I know WWE won't do that, but it's also very weird where she's part of this group that's a heel sinister group, but then when she gets attacked, they don't help her. Just from a psychology standpoint, if these were real evil people who will do whatever it takes, they wouldn't really care about this arbitrary rule. I think, as the caller mentioned, caller Chris said, it does kind of make her look weak because the only way she can get back up is if she has female friends, which Wade Barrett mentioned, and she doesn't. So therefore, she can be attacked from behind. I think they need to have her with dual purposes of, yes, she's still a part of the Judgment Day trying to keep them together, but she really wants to focus on a match against Raquel or whoever, and kind of putting her with you are booking her with two minds.
I think Ripley's fine. If you didn't pick up on that, Chris, caller Chris, I think she's super over, and I think she'll be fine. I think if you get jumped from behind and you're kind of covering and cowering, I wouldn't be worried. I mean, like, I'll put it this way. I don't think WWE's trying to do anything to make her look weak. And if anybody else feels the way that you did watching that it's behind the scenes, then they're going to, you know, alter it. But I think, you know, they know Rhea Ripley's really over, and they want to, you know, have some, make sure Raquel has some credibility. And Candice LeRae seems, you know, like a feisty friend also fighting hard So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they wanted anyone to look weak in that angle, but they wanted to get over that she was left reeling and then had to be held back. Chris, you want to follow up on that or anything else you want to bring up?
Just one thing. I just want to ask you a question, Wade. Do I need to email you first and ask you who your co-host is so you won't mix this up?
You can email ahead if you'd like, yes.
Yeah, that way I know it's confusing with two Chris's.
I just if I say Chris, what do you think? Two people talk at once. So as an experienced host, I try to steer away from that.
Okay. Well, that's all I have tonight, and thank you all, and everyone go VIP.
Chris, thanks for calling. It's always good to hear from you, and don't be a stranger, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being a VIP member.
Thanks.
All right, our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. We'll go now to area code 215. 215, go ahead. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes, it is you. Who just said
hello? My name is Chinedu. I'm from Baltimore. I'm from Philadelphia. I live in Baltimore. Pleasure to talk
cool.
to you. I've been a subscriber. Yeah,
sorry for interrupting. State your name again because I didn't pick up on it. Now I was talking.
I got you.
Go ahead.
It's Chin Adum. It's a Nigerian name. Chin Adum.
Great. I love it. I love the name.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad I asked. Thanks
yeah.
for
Yeah, no,
yeah,
I,
thanks
I,
for
I've been
down,
subscribing to you for almost 20 years. So pleasure to talk to you. But I'm sorry if I'm talking over something that you might have brought up in the previous before I got on. But the one thing I wanted to talk about was Chad Gable today. It seemed like to me like the directions were a lot different in the way the story is normally written. I don't know if that's just me reading into things, but it seemed like it was like a new sort of like a post WrestleMania, but it was post SummerSlam. I don't know if it's a new this man whatever, but it seemed like now let's put some more, even Shinsuke Nakamura, put more attention on people who haven't been put on. And I'm sorry if this was already brought up, but that's what I noticed the most of this episode. I don't know if you guys concur or not.
Yeah, no, we didn't address that yet. I'm glad that you brought it up. This did, I thought this, we talked about it on the VIP roundtable with Todd and Rich Saturday night. My closing question to them at the end is, what did this show make obvious in terms of what's coming up next? Is there anything that we could look at and go, oh, okay, they set this up and that up? And SummerSlam just felt like a real end point for a lot of things. There were some things, obviously. Yeah, exactly. And I was kind of excited about tonight's show because of that. Like, that was one of the reasons I was looking forward to this show. I figured there'd be a lot of video recaps. And that's fine.
I'm sorry, I do that too much.
Yes.
But even with J.D. McDonough, he had to start and stop, and today he had a big, I think you're on the same page there.
I was going to say, too, since so many people see these PLEs on Peacock now, they might want to cut back on the video packages because it used to be such, one-tenth or one-fifth or one-twentieth of the audience would see these PLEs or pay-per-views, and now, it's a pretty high percentage, but the video recaps are nice too because it does reinforce things, and they the video.
You're
packages
Mr.
Are really
Keller, that was on my list. That was my third bullet point, Mr. Keller. That was my third bullet point. They gave away the whole pay-per-view. But back in my day, they would give you like a small slice, maybe imply the one. Now they gave away everything but the 1, 2, 3. So I'm like, why would I even have to watch it? And I get to the first hour was no commercial, whatever. But they showed the whole match. They showed everything. Like, I was almost mad that I watched the pay-per-view because I could have just watched the tonight. I mean, not really, but kind of, it's reducing. And I know that they must have some internal metrics that show that, like, the replay value is not worth it or whatever. But to me, I think they overdid that for whatever reason. But, I liked how they were sort of changing direction, new angles, the four-way for the Intercontinental Championship, which I guess you kind of have to. Like I said, like you were saying, the clean slate. But the one thing that I have and I want to ask you about was the Miz and the what's the bull's name? The LA Knight.
LA Knight.
Like what I felt when I saw that was similar to John Cena and Austin Theory. Like he was saying things about him that are actually true that the casual mm-hmm. audience wouldn't know, you know. And you're pointing out his flaws. Remember the whole Paul Heyman thing? I'm from Philly, you know. So he highlight the weaknesses, highlight the strengths, downgrade the weaknesses, and they're bringing it. He's saying it to him, you know, and like so people in the crowd who are just fans of him because of whatever reason. Nowadays you're just fans of people because of, you know, social influence or whatever. The youngins, not me. But now they're saying, no, you can't do this, you don't do that. You're slashing the plan, you'll be fired in 4 or 5 months. And, like, isn't that sort of downgrading your own star? Like, I know they might, Triple H might say, like, oh, I want to be able to weather this storm. But aren't you really, like, depreciating your asset by doing that? Like, that was actually the main thing I wanted to ask you. But, I don't know if you brought that up previous, but I really wanted your opinion on that. I thought it was damaging.
Yeah, no, we haven't brought it up yet. Yeah, so okay. I'll table that for a second because I want to actually throw to Chris on your first 2 points too. But
sure,
definitely,
sure,
you've actually really laid the – no, that's okay. You've really set the table well for the LA Knight Miz discussion, and I'll tease it by saying I disagree with you on some key things. But we'll talk about it,
okay.
And I'm very curious to hear what Chris has to say. Right. Going back to your original point, Chad Gable – Jason Paul's going to be so happy because Jason in his Raw reports, it's like, come on, Chad Gable deserves better. Chad Gable deserves better. You know, there's more to him than being, you know, a mid-card comedy figure who jobs all the time. And so I was happy to see it. Now, they chose the right night. You know, they're in Minneapolis. It's his hometown. And the crowd was super into him, and it was so fun to see. And I think he has put in some strong performances lately that go beyond, you know, just being kind of a you know, mid-card comedy figure. And tonight seemed like a validation of those performances in a sense that they're pushing more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might just get, you know, destroyed by Gunther and then go back to where he was. But at least he had this night, and he might have more. The crowd chanting his name, he seemed into it. So I like that. Yes, J.D. McDonough.
And then he had the kid, Ballard, too. He had the kid at the end. He had his kid with the end. I mean, that's love. You know what I mean? That's like his life. That's like his dream. You know what I mean? So I feel like – before, they would, like, just bury him when he was in Minnesota. And, like, they might just be showing him love, like instead of, like, you know, I've been subscribed to him for 20 years. Most of the time, he'd be back home, and they would just, you know, have him lose to whoever in front of his family. Now that he's going to, like, have him, give him his moment, which is why I think that's why that's the business is actually booming now to a little bit. Like, it's like we can actually enjoy watching it, even if everything doesn't happen properly. Like it's feel good to a certain extent, you know. Even though I'm a fan of the bad guys, like I felt good when I saw Chad Gable pick up his kid and run around the thing with his little suits and fingers up, you know. So it was a moment to remember.
Well, Chad Gable treated his kid a lot better than Christian treated his daughter on Collision on Saturday, which is also hilarious.
He was touching
the
belt.
Security.
He
doesn't have clearance.
It's not her belt, then.
By the way, we did not
do
the
belt.
We didn't do a. Yeah, exactly. The hypocrisy was hilarious. We did not do a Collision Post show on Saturday because of SummerSlam, and so this Saturday when we do our Collision Post show, we'll be talking about both episodes. Like we'll make a point to review some of that stuff in a little more detail, and also be doing a Wake Keller Hotline for VIP members in the meantime on it. So that said, Chad Gable, I love that he protected his kid's ears from the loud noises because his son was young enough. It's, you know, it's good to not have his ears blown out by pyro and loud music. So, you know, he's a good dad. That was a cool moment. Yeah, J.D. McDonough with Finn Balor dropping the factoid that I've known this guy for decades, which establishes right out of the bat his loyalty might be stronger to J.D. than to the rest of the Judgment Day who he's having issues with. And I thought that was a really good thing to include. And
nobody knew that.
With the
nobody
term.
Knew that.
Yeah.
Nobody knew that.
You
know,
then you had.
Nobody knew that. I think what you always say about AEW when they establish these relationships with them, like I didn't know that they knew each other for that. You know, so at least just say it once on TV so we know. Right? So now I know why he's doing this. You know, I feel like on other companies, they might have just had him attack him without knowing why. So he said, I've known him for 20 years. So now I know why he's attacking the people to try to make an impression. Those little small little like things that make a lot of sense to somebody who's just watching the show. You know, I know you know that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So yeah, it did feel like the day after WrestleMania, you know, the best ones where it's just kind of hitting the reset button and you're seeing some new things. So, Chris, I want to throw to you for your take on that particular topic first. Did this feel like a reset after a big pay-per-view, and did they do enough to make it feel like, yeah, we got kind of a fresh start for the rest of summer going into fall?
Yes, I definitely felt that way. It was reminded me of kind of the back in the day when there were only four pay-per-views a year, and it really was a reset because we were going to have another big event for another 3 months. I think it's really important, especially with the brand split. I know LA Knight showed up today, is to have things going forward, even with the lengthy recaps. It's funny for me because I joke on our show, Wrestling Coast to Coast, with Justin about how much, you know, some of these independent promotions should recap and let people know what's happened before. And WWE takes it to a whole new level. I definitely thought it was overload, but then I get it. You know, not everyone watches every show and sees everything. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think, you know, between Chad Gable doing what he did, and I actually, and this may be a bit more nuanced for WWE entirely, but I would like the Chad Gable gimmick to be is he can be fun-loving and goofy when, you know, a lot of times, but when something happens, he kind of turns it on another level because he has that ability. And so because, you know, Gunther and Imperium are being the way they are, he turns it on a different level from his normal self. I think there's definitely depth there they can add to his character. But it was great to see him as a father who just took his two young daughters to soccer game here in Columbus, Ohio, with fireworks. Those headphones are worth their price in gold. So I was glad to see him have his young son have them on. And yeah, he had a good performance with Walter a few weeks ago in that 5-minute challenge. And now they're setting up a match or an undetermined time. But I look forward to watching that when it takes place.
As far as the video packages go, Chris, do you get, having watched the pay-per-view, do you get anything out of seeing how WWE frames it, what they emphasize, how they introduce it? Maybe there's commentary over it or coming out of it. Do they add enough, or do you think that, again, with the point I made earlier, so many more people are watching these now because of the accessibility on a good, you know, on a, doesn't take, it's not wallet busting anymore to see all these. Should they augment this, or do you think they do a good enough job in that regard?
You know, I think they do a good enough job, and I say that from the standpoint of that I did not see SummerSlam. Not see all of SummerSlam this weekend. So even though I knew the result, it was good to actually see it happen, as the understanding that Raw is a three-hour show, and not everyone watches every 3 hours. So just because you recap something in the first 10 minutes doesn't mean that, you know, at 10, 15, two hours, 15 minutes later, it's not important to catch viewers who may not have seen it before. As well as, you know, this was one of the largest attended, highest grossing events WWE has had from a SummerSlam perspective, and they want to reiterate that over and over again with the newspaper articles and that type of stuff. And also because they're on NBC Universal product, it's really also advertising for Peacock because, you know, if you didn't see it and you want to watch it, it's very easy for you to sign up to a service that exists there with the same owners where you can see it all. So, but I think part of the issue with wrestling is you want people to, you can't assume that everyone knows everything and has gone back and is expert on everything. So hitting them over the head with recaps, letting them know what's happening, you know, previewing SmackDown that, you know, Jimmy Uso will be there with Roman, I think it's really important, and I think it's really good to make sure that fans are not left in the dark.
Yeah. All right. So,
my bad.
No. Go ahead, Chinder.
Yeah, no, I also wanted to say that, like, I think that's kind of one of the things that, like, I'm 40 years old, right? So before, and you've talked about this, I'd know you. You're driving people towards the pay-per-view, and now it's a lot different, the business model, right? And I'm actually have a PhD in finance towards driving people towards, like, the subscription. So they don't really, before, I used to have to search out what happened. Now I can just YouTube it or even stream it or whatever. But I've never seen him show that much of the match so many times at once. But I guess they are thinking they already have the money. So there's no – let's just update them on the story. So let's move on with the story. Now their customer base is their weekly shows. And, like, the PLEs are sort of just additional revenue. Whereas before, I don't know what the cut was. Like, I haven't studied it like you, you know, but I feel like it was much more reliant on it, you know, 10, 15 years ago than now. And that's why they can do that, or that's why they do that. But, I mean, maybe not. I don't know. It's my opinion.
Well, let's pivot to the LA Knight Miz segment, because I think there's some rookie differences with the Cena Austin Theory segment and what we saw with Miz and LA Knight. I think Robert F. Kennedy, not the current kook, but the one back in the 60s. He said, you know, hang a lantern on your problems. You know, don't let someone else define your problems. Define them yourself. Draw awareness to them. And they did that here, you know, through Miz being a heel. Miz framed it. Now, John Cena, a hero, demeaning a young up-and-coming star in Austin Theory is like, fans are inherently supposed to side with Cena on that. That's the goal. In this case, Miz is saying stuff that is basically true about LA Knight. I mean, it's not just shaking hands. It's just I reported, I think initially, you know, and drew it, attention to, and then it trended and got a video on it. And that, you know, he has an issue going back quite a ways with Robin colleagues and new wrestlers he's never met before the wrong way. So Miz addressed it and talked about the tradition of handshakes, but he did so in such a petulant way, you're kind of like, oh, come on, just shut up. It's not that big of a deal. You know, geez, get over it. You know, like Miz took something that's a legit issue, and they let Miz frame it in a way where now it diffused it because it's Miz complaining about it like the way that he did. And then you add to it LA Knight. I thought it was just a great response going, WWE played it safe with people like you. You know, soft style Miz. I remember being at a Raw, like, I don't know, 15 years ago. And I was at the hotel bar afterwards, and all, you know, wrestlers are hanging out with wrestlers. Miz was hanging out with Kevin Dunn and Jerry Lawler. Like, you know, and I was like told, oh yeah, you know, he's always kissing up to management. You know, like he's the teacher's pet type, even off camera. And so it plays perfectly. LA Knight is saying, yeah, they played it safe. They went with you. And they kept telling me, we don't want to take a chance on this guy yet. We don't want to take a chance on this guy yet. I thought LA Knight, I mean, he stumbled a little bit, just like he does in his matches, but he recovered. And it didn't matter in the end. There's enough else there. And so LA Knight is going, yeah, I am. It played into his personality of being the rebel, the guy who can't be contained. He's not corporate. He's not kiss-ass. He's not, you know, doing the things that, heck, even Cody admittedly does. You know what I mean? Like, people love Cody.
Yep,
but LA Knight is a refreshing welcome contrast to that. So I liked what they did tonight. And I, again, it's all about, you know, not every situation that looks the same is the same. And sometimes you can misplay a situation like Cena Theory. And other times you can play it well because you're thinking ahead about, do we hang a lantern on this, draw attention to it, and then define it in a way that diffuses any negativity. But it also raises the bar for LA Knight on a personal level. Management's going, all right, we're going to let you tell your story. And we're going to let you frame this negative as a positive because it's part of who you are now, and it's going to actually make people cheer you more. I think that the goal of that segment was get people to cheer LA Knight and underline and emphasize why it took him so long to get here as a positive. Chris, what do you think of the segment? What do you think of my take on it compared to Shinedu?
Yeah, I think I'm close with you, Wade. I think the difference between this and Theory and Cena is that Miz is a heel and Miz's character is delusional. So he started his promo talking about, old school and you need to shake my hand. And then he flips out because he wants to go over his accolades because he feels disrespected. So it's a bit of a different kind of viewpoint when Miz, the delusional heel, says things, even if they're true about LA Knight. Because his character is he's a guy who's full of himself, but also has a thin skin about his own accomplishments. I think that the rise of LA Knight for me is so interesting because it wasn't that long ago I feel I was watching him in the NWA. And to see him now be a huge star in WWE with his merchandise moving, especially with the name of a defunct shoe company from the 80s. I can't personally get past that, but I think that they need to ride.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think they need to ride his momentum. Having him win the Battle Royal helps. And I think putting him against someone like The Miz is also good because obviously he'll be cheered and he'll get a victory. But I think they need to move him up the card and see what he can do, let him sink or swim.
Yeah, so I think it's the perfect pairing.
Yeah.
I think I think it's the perfect pairing, which is why I was watching it with a very discernible eye. And I just thought, honestly, my opinion, everything you said, I agree with. So it's kind of I felt the way I felt when I was watching the Miz portion of the promo. And then once LA Knight got on, I agreed with everything you said. So they took me to both directions, to both sides of the boat perfectly, because it's true. But here's my thing. When even though Miz is the heel, everything he's saying is true, though, right? So to me, I don't want it to get some casual random fan, right, to be like, oh, so what happened to him? Now he's this, now he's that. He's it. And you're putting excessive hurdles in front of his success. You don't have to bring all that up. You know what I mean? He's the most popular person or one of the most popular people going. Why you got to bring up all this old stuff and throw why? What's the benefit of it? You know, to me, it's kind of like a hazing thing in a fraternity, which I've been a part of. You want to get here? Do this first. I don't really have a problem with it. I just think it's bad for overall business. You don't got to bring all that old stuff up. But again, my opinion, and I have a random opinion. So that's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Chris, what do you think about that? Should they have just gone a different direction and stayed away from it, as Shinodu is kind of making a case for? Why bring it up if it's not something most people know or are thinking about? Why even draw attention to it? Is there a negative? Did they kind of successfully walk through a dangerous obstacle course and succeed, but maybe it wasn't even worth trying in the first place because it could have backfired? What do you think about that?
I think the way it turned out pretty well. I think it's very possible it could have gone in a bad direction just because of, bringing up things that are negative about someone. But the way LA Knight turned it around, talking about, the fact that Miz was safe and, he was not. And, while he was doing that for 20 years, he was on the outside, but now he got his way in and, he'll do whatever it takes to get to the top. I think they turned it around. I think, people get very focused on sort of, insider stuff sometimes to a point. But from a storyline perspective, and obviously if they mention it every single week going forward, his issues, then that won't be helpful to him. But just in the context of today, I feel it was helpful because he was able to turn it around in that instant. The comments didn't linger more than, make people think about it more than you would have otherwise.
All right, great. Shinodu, anything else you want to close with?
I guess just one last thing I'll throw in there. I guess if you're trying to push, and I don't know, I don't want to sound wrong here, but Shayna Baszler, you push her after the win with the low crowd, and I think she had actual facial injuries or whatever, to me, if you're trying to put a star over, you don't want to put them over or even put them on looking. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to overstep my bounds there. But whatever you were trying to do with her today, it didn't work because, I don't know, maybe the boy Cal from Baltimore right down the street might have something to say about it. But I don't, if you have a broken face, right, and your eyes all puffed up, and you aren't really known for that, so to speak. I just think that you should wait a week. But maybe they want to capitalize off the momentum. That's why, I've never been a wrestling booker, but I just thought that, it's not. But anyway, that's my last point. Thank you guys for your time. And, go VIP, by the way. I've been VIP since let me see, 2005. So it's about 18 years. So go VIP.
Wow.
That's what it's about. Yeah, 2005. Man.
Shindu, thanks. Call again. Don't wait 18 years.
I got you. Take care.
Take care. Thank you so much. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. We got some longtime VIP members on today's show. It's pretty cool. You can become one of them, and then in 18 years, you can call and say you've been a VIP member for 18 years. Or you can call sooner. You don't have to wait 18 years. All right, Chris, the Shayna Baszler follow-up on Ronda Rousey. Michael Cole talked about, yeah, Shayna was coming up from NXT, starting to get momentum. Ronda came in, stole all her thunder, stole the attention and the spotlight, and now she drove Ronda away. And now kind of they're trying to pass Shayna into Ronda's spot, which you know, can be dangerous. And you know, I don't say big shoes to fill, but there's, you know, you're a student of wrestling history, and you know, the new Razor and Diesel did not fill the shoes of Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and Lex Luger didn't fill the shoes of Hulk Hogan, and oh god, there's Lance Von Erich didn't fill David Von Erich's shoes. I mean, there's so many instances where someone left and then they tried to say, well, this one is as good or better. I don't know if that's a favor to Shayna or not. I don't think it's a big deal, or it defines her, you know, either way. But what did you think of the SummerSlam, the idea of going with that program, which Shayna and Ronda wanted to do? Like, Ronda wanted to put over Baszler. The idea was the announcers would do what they did tonight after the match, which is say Ronda's never submitted and Baszler got her to submit. I look at this and I think Ronda and Shayna overestimated how much it would matter to WWE fans that Ronda submitted for the first time. Lost by submission for the first time, and it was to Shayna. I think they lean too much on that being a big deal. I think Shayna's going to get over if she's interesting in the ring and on the mic, and people have strong feelings pro or con for her. I'm not saying she can't do that. I just don't think beating Ronda is all that they were hoping it would turn out to be. Your thoughts on all that?
First of all, I love the Von Erich wrestler as a reference, as a huge fan of world class. Back in the day.
Yeah.
I think the difference with Shayna and Ronda, first of all, it's funny because Shayna is a heel, but the crowd chanted, "Thank you, Shayna," because of the belief that she sent Ronda Rousey away, which kind of leads to a very awkward reaction there. I think the one thing that the advantage for her is that she actually beat Ronda Rousey, so she can get momentum off that. Some of the other examples you gave were people replacing others who had left for whatever reason, or in the case of David Von Erich, passed away. So there wasn't a proverbial movement from one to the other with her beating Ronda and then maybe getting some more wins. Obviously, she won today against Zoe Stark. She can, and she interacted with Becky Lynch, maybe setting up a program after Becky and Trish wrestle next week. I think they're doing a good job of putting her in a space where she can be elevated. And also the fact that, yeah, she was injured. Yeah, she has a black eye, but she's going to fight because she likes to beat people up, and she's not going to let a small thing like a black eye get in the way of that.
What are her prospects at this point? What do you see that you like, and what concerns you, if anything?
Well, I think she's someone that needs to be like a menacing challenger to a babyface champion, and the women's champion is on Raw is Rhea Ripley, who's also a heel. So I think parlaying her into a Becky Lynch feud would be helpful, because I think she needs to wrestle a babyface. But you know, again, I don't think her character and Becky should be out there doing 10-minute promos back and forth, because her character isn't someone who should be doing soliloquies, as I like to say. She'd be fighting, and I think it showed kind of her with her and Zoe Stark is that, you know, sometimes my issue with WWE that everyone has to come out there and talk and say their verbiage and get it all out, where it's wrestling. Some people are good at that. Some just want to beat someone else up. And, you know, they both stumbled a little bit because they had to, you know, had this contrived way of talking. I think for her, that's going to be a negative for her. I wish, you know, one of my, I guess, pet peeves is I wish WWE brought back managers, because she would be a great person with a manager who did all her talking and just sent her out to the ring to destroy people.
Yeah.
But in lieu of that, they need to put her in situations where she's not forced to talk as much, but is able to do what she can in the ring to show, you know, her skill and ability.
Very good. All right, we'll go to Charles in Mexico City next. Charles, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, I was thinking about the tag teams. I saw the New Day
yeah.
came back, and the tag pretty vacant right now with Sami Zayn out and Kevin Owens out. I wanted to know what you guys thought about the future picture of the tag team division. It looks like they set up New Day to be strong once again. And I see the Profits, Street Profits on SmackDown looking to make a move towards that. Do you think the WWE should have a tournament for the vacant titles, or do you think they're going to try to merge the titles into one, or should they break them up to the two different shows?
Chris, I'll throw you first on that. What do you think?
I'm tired of tournaments for titles and battle royals for titles. I mean, you have matches, have people get on winning streaks, and whether it be tag, men, women, whatever, and then have people who are successful challenge for titles. That's my mantra. I think that they need to they have struggles with tag teams because they don't focus on tag team wrestling enough. I think the New Day would be a great opponents for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn when they're healthy, but again, issue, you have two babyface teams. Why are they wrestling? Are they having just a sporting contest just because they wanted to give them a title shot, or they respect them, or whatever? I guess you could do that, but it's not as it's not as great of a reason to fight as opposed to some serious animosity. But yeah, I think WWE has to really strengthen their tag team division. They have talented wrestlers. They can always put other wrestlers together. And at this point, I would just keep the belts as one, because they have enough struggle booking one tag division. They're going to really struggle if they have to book two.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like the floating champion setup better. I think when we look at the division right now, the Street Profits are most likely to end up as kind of the centerpiece tag team. And, you know, with the Lashley group, I don't know what WWE was expecting their fan response to be, but I think people are into them right now with Lashley. And if they end up, you know, being champs and floating over to both shows, you're getting a two-for-one out of them as an act two. So that jumps out. Chris, what do you think about New Day's return? The Street Profits are hit at reset button, so you don't necessarily want New Day to also do it. It could take away from what the Profits are doing with Lashley. But, you know, seeing the trombone again and Kofi leaning on some of the same, you know, vocal signature whatevers, which Jackie Redmond put over big time. Oh, nothing more delightful than having him do that right next to me. There was an element that was endearing, but there's also part of me that was like, I wish we got something fresh from them with their return. Where are you on the New Day, and what do you think, Chris, of them coming back tonight the way they did?
I think coming back the way they did is fine. When they've been gone for a few months, people haven't seen them. It's almost, again, maybe leaning back on my independent wrestling watching, but almost a nostalgia act where you love to see them do the old hits. But because this is televised wrestling, they need to move forward from that. I think really they need to establish themselves, you know, why they're back together. You know, they want to go for the tag team titles. They have shown times where they can be serious. I think the New Day journey has been incredible. I remember going to the Royal Rumble in 2015 in Philadelphia, the one where Roman Reigns was booed very, very, very badly. And on the train back to taking the Amtrak back to New York, the people were booing the New Day, even though we were gone from the event. And to think that they are considered now one of the best stables of all time, and some think the best, is quite a testament to them. But I think they need to not rely on the nostalgia. I think if they come in with 1 week or 2 weeks of, yeah, we're back, we're having fun, but we have a goal in mind, we want to go after the tag team titles, or we want to go after someone in particular, I think that'll be really helpful to focus them and show that they're moving forward.
I'm with you on that. I mean, I, you know, again, like I would have If they came back totally remade, I think it would take away from what the Prophets are doing. But I would like to see them not lean on being a nostalgia act. And I think they kind of, you know, need them right now with Sammy and KO in the situation that they're in, that Charles brings up. Charles, I'll throw it back to you. Do you want to follow up on that at all? Do you have any ideas, or do you want to bring up a different topic?
Sure. I was thinking about JD McDonagh joining the Judgment Day and maybe them challenging for the tag team.
Yeah.
Titles as well.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a done deal in him joining or eventually joining, or do you think that's just part of the breakdown or the separation of the Judgment Day? I think they're stronger than the Bloodline. Their storyline is almost stronger than the Bloodline at this point.
Yeah, that has crossed my mind. I'm hesitant to go there, but I've been a fan of and a booster of what we've seen with Judgment Day increasingly so over the past month or so. And JD McDonagh and Finn Balor, there's a chemistry there. It's, you know, I think it's, if you add JD to the Judgment Day, you're adding an interesting and very different dynamic than the current dynamic with Dom and Rhea and Priest and Balor that's already there. Edge is such a distant memory. But, I think you can add something. It's kind of like Sammy getting added to the Bloodline. It can completely change the dynamic and bring different things out of different people. Chris, where do you think Finn breaks away and goes with JD, or do you think Finn talks Priest and Ripley and Dom into letting JD into the group, and then they tell that story arc over weeks, if not months?
I think he should break away, or that would make the most sense. You know, the opening segment where Judgment Day came out, he attacked Seth on his own. You could tell, you know, Rhea Ripley kind of paused, and they all jumped in because that's what they're supposed to do, working together. But then they obviously argued in the back while he's talking to McDonagh, and, you know, McDonagh attacks Sami Zayn, which maybe he was sent by Balor. I think they're at the point where they've had too many near misses with Money in the Bank. And also Balor, to me, he's lost a lot, and so he needs to gain momentum, and really by either breaking away, either becoming his own a heel, or even they kick him out or whatever. I think he needs to sort of regain momentum, and he can do that with JD McDonagh. And again, maybe, you know, we mentioned before about tag team wrestling, put them together as a team for a while, maybe have them win the titles, have heels that Owens and Zayn can feud in. But I think they're really getting to the point where they should either remove Balor and replace him, or have them stop kind of being on this will they break up or not, because they, you know, the reason factions break up is because you have two people who want one spot and they can't agree on who's going to take it, and at some point that just has to break. And I think they really can't put that forward too much longer. I think it's a few weeks away from really that breaking apart.
Charles, what do you want to see pace-wise with this?
I love factions. I've been a fan since the 90s. I loved when there was Nation of Domination and DX, and like Owen Hart joining, like being like a de facto or like a friend or ally of the Nation of Domination. That was pretty cool. I'm thinking about shifting the question of comebacks to comebacks. I thought at SummerSlam we would see a big comeback or someone new for Cody to challenge, to know what you guys thought of Cody's new challenger coming out of SummerSlam. Do you think it could be a comeback from Randy Orton as an opponent? Do you think it could be maybe elevated another character that's already on Raw? What did you guys think about that moving forward with the Cody Rhodes storyline? And comeback.
Yeah, I've come back talked about Randy Orton. Yeah, for sure. I talked about Randy being someone I'd be really intrigued to feud with Cody if Randy's cleared. We did not, you know, report. A lot of people got a lot of headlines and clicks out of, you know, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton stuff, and it didn't come to fruition, you know, but doesn't mean they won't, you know, at some point come back. And I really like Randy as an opponent for Cody. I just think there's such a rich history there with their dads and being part of Legacy. I can just see them interacting with each other. I can visualize it and just imagine really good promos. And I can see Randy being inspired by, you know, Cody's popularity. If Randy were to be a heel or come back as a friend and turn on him, you could even have a Cody-Randy tag team. Speaking of tag teams, going back to the last topic, to set them up for a split or a breakup too. So there's different ways they can go. You know, they just turned Shinsuke to set up Seth. So I wouldn't want to see like Riddle go heel to feud with Cody. But if they didn't just turn Shinsuke go and Seth, you know, Riddle would even come to mind. You could use that as a way to then have Randy, it's the on-ramp for Randy to then enter the picture a little bit later if he needed more time to be ready. And I mean, he's going through a lot physically. I don't know what to expect from him physically if he's able to come back. Chris, what do you think about that topic? We also have an email that we'll get to next on with some ideas for Cody from a listener who's been listening to us bring this up and talk about it.
Yeah, I think Randy Orton would be a great opponent for Cody. Maybe this was crystallized after watching that documentary on Peacock of their history and not really being resolved. And obviously now they're in different places than they were in Legacy several years ago. But obviously I don't know his status. You know, he's been injured for a while. And he also was a popular babyface. So do they want him to come back as a heel? And there's obviously the combination there with Matt Riddle, his RK-Bro. So, yeah, I think Randy Orton would be great, but health-wise, I almost – it's weird. Like, I almost wish there was – not this person, but there needs to be, like, an almost-esque character for Cody to battle, someone who's, you know, menacing, a Braun Strowman. I know he's injured, but someone who is like – you know, Cody is doing – his own impersonation of Dusty Rhodes, of his dad from the 80s, and Dusty. I used to joke, even as a little kid, I remember telling my parents when Dusty would lose to Ric Flair, I'd be like, well, he'll just beat Tully Blanchard because he's got to beat somebody else if he can't be the world champion. So we need to find Cody that other mountain to climb.
Charles, back to you. Any follow-up or anything else you want to bring up?
My last thing was L.A. Knight versus The Miz. I thought that was like a throwback to the Attitude Era as well. And I was thinking that could be a strong mid-card feud that I feel like WWE has been lacking for a while. I keep seeing the Austin Theory feuds being really flat and not really going somewhere. But what I wanted to bring up was the mid-card. Bring back comebacks again. I was thinking of Braun Strowman, but what wrestlers are not on the roster or not seen on Raw right now that we would like to see come back to fill in that mid-card? Because I'm really excited about what LA Knight is doing on the mid-card level. And Shinsuke. I think Shinsuke is one of those. But maybe who could we bring back for some excitement in that upper mid card, lower mid card?
Yeah, and Charles, since you brought up the question, are there certain names that you have in mind that you're fishing for or have at least crossed your mind in that regard?
Strowman came to mind. I was thinking about, actually, I don't know if this is related or if I'm jumping all over the place, but you mentioned earlier managers being important. I was thinking of MVP coming back and like a new Hurt Business, really filling in that mid-card and maybe traveling from Raw to SmackDown. I think they would be a great challenger to the Bloodline and to the Judgment Day. Omos, I was thinking about as well. But I really feel like the roster is missing it's obvious, it's KO. Like the KO during the Jericho time, like that upper mid card, like that was really, really strong. But obviously they're injured. So I'm asking the question because I can't think of any right now, but I was hoping you guys could use your expertise and bring them up.
Yeah, for sure. So, Chris, anybody come to mind as we were talking there?
The one person that came to mind, but it's not really possible because he was on the show today, but could have been used as a monster was Bronson Reed. I was surprised to see him as sort of a setup for Nakamura to win to get into the main event. You know, he's someone who I remember watching him in Impact, I guess a year and a half ago, who was, you know, he was only there for 6 months, so he lost to Josh Alexander and PCO, but he pretty much destroyed everyone else and was used to, you know, to lose to to Josh Alexander, who was the champion, and then PCO on the way out. And he's someone who could have been booked that way, but if he's losing in the second match on the show, that's not really a possibility at this point.
How about from the indie scene, the beat that you cover for the Daily Cast? Is there someone, you just mentioned Impact too, is there somebody out there unsigned that you just think would be like a good fit to add right now to kind of fortify the mid-card as Charles is kind of looking to do?
Oh, wow. There's so many people that I know that could do it. One person that I think comes to mind, someone who I just saw wrestle here. I went to Impact Against All Odds, and he was really popular. And he's a bigger guy. I've got to keep that in mind. WWE is Joe Hendry. He's a wrestler who was in Ring of Honor, and he was in Impact prior. But he's someone who is – he has this catchy theme song. It's really catchy. I even got my daughter to sing it. But he's someone who has had some really good matches in Impact as their digital media champion, even though he just lost it to Kenny King. And I think he could add some comedy as well as being a big, you know, a bigger person that would have good matches. From a heel perspective, there's a wrestler that's really interesting. He's not a bigger guy. His name is Brian Keith. He wrestles in primarily in Texas and a lot of independents. We actually saw him, Justin and I, wrestling Revolver in Dayton, Ohio, a few months ago. He's a really good wrestler, a really good striker, and someone that could be a bit different. Don't know if he'd fit WWE because of, you know, he's not the tallest person in the world, but he's definitely someone that is one of my favorite people that is not signed to a wrestling company.
You know, LA Knight's not the tallest person in the world either, but he made a big production out of going eye to eye with Miz. You know, I'm at your level, but he was also wearing heels in his cowboy boots, and Miz was wearing pretty flat shoes. They've been pretty creative about not making it seem like LA Knight is one of the shorter guys getting a push on the roster. I think they've done an effective job with that. That always concerned me a little bit with LA Knight. He always seemed like he was going to be on the shorter side for WWE, but so far I don't think that's been an issue in terms of how he's been framed, like literally by the cameras on promos. He's going eye to eye with Sheamus, and he's not as tall as Sheamus, so something was up there. But, you know, he's over, and fans don't care that much, but you still don't want LA Knight looking like he's 4 inches shorter than Miz either. Like, I think from a height standpoint, more of just a sidebar here, it's become a non-issue because of how they presented LA Knight, which I think is really smart. Cool. Well, Charles, I don't have anyone else who comes to mind. I mean, I've been trying to think back to somebody else who's kind of been out who would matter if they were to come back. And I mean, most of them are. You know, you've got Styles. You know, Styles is back in the mix. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, anything else you wanted before I let you go?
No, thanks so much. It was interesting to see in the battle, the four-way, all of the superstars in the match were NXT stars, but they presented and looked like WWE stars. And what I'm noticing is that the majority of the roster is like NXT now. There's very few superstars on the roster outside of The Miz and Cody that are that didn't go through NXT. So I think that's a sign for me to start watching NXT a little bit more, but that's all I had to say.
Mm-hmm. Great. Charles, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. I hope you call again too.
Talk soon.
Take care. Yep. All right. So our number is 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1 if you want to be on the show. That's 347-215-8558. And then you can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so Cy T emailed and said they're tying themselves up in knots, stopping Cody from challenging Seth, and even try to not make the Raw title look like a secondary belt. I know the draft means nothing at this point, if it ever did, but they might consider trading Cody for LA Knight. They're both on the wrong show for their goals or likely title feuds. Or just have Cody drop a loser leaves town or loser leaves Raw match. So I thought the subject line, and I thought ideas for Cody were going to be opponents. Turns out it's the idea is move him over to SmackDown and then get LA Knight officially to Raw. Chris, did that bother you at all that Knight showed up on the wrong brand and it wasn't really formally addressed, I don't think?
I've kind of given up on the WWE draft rules, so it didn't bother me, though, because I don't expect them to follow the rules. They've never done it. I guess they may have had the excuse if it was in the same town as SummerSlam that he was still there and doing a photo shoot, but, you know, they can't stick to their own rules, so I'm not surprised when they don't do it.
What about the idea of switching Cody and LA Knight, if they just formalized it?
Well, I think the issue is I don't think they want Cody to be involved in the title mix until WrestleMania. So
right.
You could switch him, but you still have the same issue. It actually, you have a little bit of a more of an excuse if he's on Raw because he can't wrestle Roman, as opposed to if he's on SmackDown, and then he's not going to wrestle Roman for 3 or 4 months or not set up in a program with him. I think that because they're loose with the rules, they should just keep them where they are and just hope the clock runs out and they can get to January when they can go for the big push for WrestleMania.
I think that is what they're going to do. And I'm intrigued. I want to see what they do with Cody. And there's options out there and they can turn people, they can bring people back. But sitting here, it's not obvious to me, you know, what that is. And we talked about that Sunday or Saturday night too on that VIP roundtable after SummerSlam. All right. Let's move to mailbag. The next mail, I should say. Dave from Holyoke, Mass. says, hey, Wade, I hope all is well. Here it is approaching 11 p.m. on the East Coast. While I'm on summer break as a teacher, I did have a busy day with my two kids and have another one set up for tomorrow. So why am I still up? The Judgment Day is in the main event. Gone for the most part of the days where the main event is a throwaway because the third hour is going to drop so much in ratings that who cares anyway. I spoke about this last time I called you, but it's refreshing to be engaged in the storylines again. While nothing of much consequence happened with the Judgment Day after the match, it doesn't matter much to me because wrestling doesn't feel like a chore to watch anymore. Oh, and there goes the Nakamura turn. We're getting a live commentary in this email here. I'm watching the show. But I'm sure you guys have covered that. Anyway, I just wanted to put in an observation. Have a great night. We've talked about this, Chris, that Raw has not been a slog, and the Judgment Day are a big part of that. Cody's a big part of that. You know, you got Seth doing his thing, and I mean, there's a list of other things, but the Judgment Day is kind of the first thing that gets mentioned when people talk about what it is that's helping to fill 3 hours of Raw, and it's the diversity of the personalities in the group, and now they might be adding JD. Well, they are adding JD to the dynamic at this point. Have you felt that way about Raw also, that Judgment Day are a big part of making it not just more watchable, but actually a show that I look forward to now more than I have in a while?
Yes, I think because of their multiple dimensions of the fact that, well, one, they have the feud amongst each other, but they've been feuding with Seth and Raquel and Dominic's going to NXT and going to wrestle Dragon Lee tomorrow. So they have all these multiple dimensions. And I think also Priest having the Money in the Bank and will they, won't they, will he cash it in? Is he going to help Finn Balor win the title? The only thing for me going forward is kind of similar to the Bloodline. The Bloodline was able to shift opponents with Roman Reigns shifting with whether it was Drew McIntyre or Kevin Owens or Sammy or Cody Rhodes, and then now on to Jey Uso. They need to shift opponents if they're going to be able to keep them together. If they're going to, you know, they were able to stay together because they had the common goal of Finn Balor winning the heavyweight title from Seth. That took them through two premium live events. They need to keep that going forward. But so far, yeah, they've done a really great job of extending the or making Raw seem more watchable. And, you know, Rhea, as you mentioned earlier, Rhea is I almost think they're going to end up breaking her out as a babyface. She gets such a different reaction than the rest of the team that I'm worried that they might try to, you know, if she loses the title, they may try to break her away. But as for now, they're doing a really good job of making the show a lot more watchable. Though it's still very long, I have to say, 3 hours.
I am not endorsing keeping it at 3 hours if they can justify financially cutting it back to two. Especially if Tony Khan's thinking of going like to 3 hours for Dynamite or something, that would become very big baby faces in the community of people like our emailer today, Dave, who's got kids and wants to see all the important stuff, but doesn't want to necessarily commit to 3 hours. All right, let's go to Azan in St. Louis. He goes, hello, waiting. Chris, what do you think about Tommaso Ciampa lately? I feel like he doesn't have anything in his act to make fans connect with him, and putting him and Johnny Gargano together again would only be good for a short period during this era of WWE's focus on storytelling. So Tommaso Ciampa, well, Chris, what do you think of where he is right now? Is he in a good spot as a guy, you know, kind of late in his career, got a late break, did a lot of good work in NXT, but, you know, maybe just being a gatekeeper of sorts is good use of him, or do you think, no, they should be doing something more with him, get him to get him to connect with fans and let him show off how good he can be?
Yeah, I think that's he can do more. He's capable of doing more. And again, I referenced tag team wrestling. Him and Johnny Gargano were one of the more popular WWE tag teams of the last, you know, 15, 20 years. There's a hole in the tag team division. They should put them together. They don't have to do it long term, but just something to get through the next few months because neither of them are doing much. Yeah, he's a gatekeeper. He was kind of there in the match today really to take the fall, but he is capable of more, and that's a kind of a way to maybe start that process. You know, team them together, feud them. I mean, NXT, I mean, a lot of people have saw that feud in NXT, but not everyone did, and you could have a different dimension to it on the WWE roster. But I know he also came back from an injury not too long ago, so they may be sort of pushing him out there slowly just to see how his health goes before they give him too heavy of a push right now.
Number 2 out of 3 from Azan. What do you think about the high focus on Ludwig Kaiser of late? He has had solid wins in a row over the past 2 weeks against former WWE Golden Boys, Otis, and Matt Riddle. Ludwig Kaiser's good. I feel like they defined him down too quickly. I think he's been good on the microphone. I can't imagine two more opposite body types who are qualified to be in the ring as wrestlers than Ludwig Kaiser and Otis. That was such a contrast. Ludwig Kaiser is the smallest, most toned waistline in WWE, and Otis, he's the opposite. It was a fun dynamic with those two. What do you think of Kaiser, Chris?
Yeah, I think he's really good. He had a really good, you know, first of all, his interaction with Maxine Dupree, just being sort of very swarmy, and then his match with Otis. Though the only concern is that, you know, he's in a stable where he can at best be number two, and the number one is not only the leader but can be a bit dictatorial in his leadership.
Yes.
So it's a very fine line for them to walk, because if he gets too popular or he gets too big for his boots, Gunther might try to knock him down to size, and that would be a different dynamic. Though again, that maybe that's something they may think about down the road, a feud between the two of them.
And finally, Azan says, after 9 years, why do you think people still enjoy the New Day act? I see them as the fabulous freebirds of our time. I'm not quite sure how to read Azan's comment there. Are we talking about the glitter, Michael Hayes, Jimmy Jam, Garvin era, where they just overstayed their welcome as an act, and it was sort of sad and a shell of their former selves? Or is he saying, no, they're like timeless and cool even as age? I don't know. But we kind of covered that earlier. Anything you want to add, Chris?
No, the only fun fact I can say about the Freebirds is that Michael Hayes and Sting were born in the same year.
Wow. Like the thing. Got to process that. All right. JB from Detroit says, he'll round out the mailbag here. Has the New Day, being away for so long, done enough to make them seem fresh, or is the act still way past its expiration date at this point? I tend to believe the latter. JB, you know our answer because you've been listening. Number 2, if Jimmy simply falls in line with Roman on Friday and rejoins the Bloodline, then this is the first time the storyline has truly jumped the shark, in my opinion, and there's really no reconciling it. So, Chris, I think we disagree with that, and I know you don't like to take the wait-and-see approach. I'm more of an advocate for it selectively when I believe it's called for. I don't think saying wait-and-see is is by definition just sort of punting or giving WWE too much credit. I just think there are times you kind of got to see what they have in mind. You know, I mean, you can't judge them the end of a movie at the end of the first act if you haven't seen the end of the movie. But there are times where clearly you just don't need to wait. I mean, no, this is not – there's no way that the decision they just made is better than the one they should have made. In this case, I want to see what they come up with. There have been weak parts in the Bloodline storyline, and I think, you know, Jay choosing Jimmy over Roman after he got this supposed new information about Jimmy, and it kind of came out of nowhere, felt jarring, and it was more playing for the pop and the shock value than it was seeming how a real human would react under those circumstances. So, and even the, yeah, there's been other things. I won't go over them all again. But I do think they probably did this with something in mind, but I am not ruling out come Friday or maybe a week from Friday, if we give them 2 weeks, we're not going is a, I think I brought it up in this VIP roundtable after SummerSlam. This could be a storyline that resembles a TV series that should have had 3 seasons, but because it was too valuable to the network, be it, you know, Lost or Dexter or Walking Dead, where it just overstays its welcome by a couple seasons. And we might get that sense here. So anything more you want to add on that, Chris?
Yeah, I just think we have to see. I think Friday will be really pivotal to see which direction it goes. I think part of the issue, not really issue, but, you know, Roman is billed as a dominant champion, but he pretty much has interference in all of his matches, at least the last year or so. So there needed to be a way for Jey Uso to lose, but someone to interfere, and they've kind of gone out the solo interference has not always worked. So this was the way. And I said, again, maybe fantasy booking on my part, if they can make it, I know we've had different varying degrees of success with brother versus brother feud, but if they can make it into a jealousy angle, I think that can be the best way to go as opposed to going back to Roman.
Number three, do the thank you, Shayna chance confirm that Baszler is over as a face? Perhaps Ronda truly did do her a favor on the way out. I think it just confirms people like Ronda. I think Shayna's still got to prove herself, but I have been an advocate for Shayna being able to prove herself. I just don't think the thank you, Shayna chant was as much about Shayna as it was about Ronda. Chris?
Yeah, I think they were just, yeah, whoever got rid of Ronda was, they were going to cheer for it. They didn't really cheer Shayna during her match or when she interacted with Becky Lynch, but so they're not really behind her just yet. They're just behind her getting rid of Ronda.
And finally, and this doesn't bode well for our wait and see on the Bloodline situation, he goes, not specifically Raw related, but what happened to the supposed rules of tribal combat? On July 21st, the rules were laid down. No one from the family can interfere. WWE specifically stated that before the match, that one of the few rules of the tribal combat is no one else is allowed to interfere until the match has reached a definitive ending. That means not only did Jimmy break the rules, but Solo did too. So not only did they ignore it for yet again lame, but they're ignoring the rules they established. So are they just going to ignore this? Breaking the sacred tribal combat rules feels like there should be consequences. Do you think they addressed this, or do you think they set up the rules and then, for whatever reason, called an audible, and they just hoped people like JB and a number of other people wouldn't have pointed out how against the rules that they set out was?
I think Jimmy's going to come out on Friday and say him and Jay are not actually twins. There's a fake birth certificate, and that way he was able to interfere. But seriously, no, I think that's kind of always been one of my issues with WWE. It's the issue I have at wrestling that we mention on our show all the time. The reason why when I was a kid I used to get so upset about certain things was that people broke the rules, and sometimes there were consequences for it. But now you have these rules and no one says anything about it, or even – analogous to that, you know, Ricochet goes to Adam Pearce and says, you know, I lost the match because I got cheated. And he goes, well, the referee's call is final, even though we all saw him get punched with the chain. I think that people aren't going to care because WWE especially has spent the last, you know, 25 years sort of disregarding rules from when they let people brawl outside in main events for 20 minutes, even though it used to have countouts. So I don't think too many people are going to be bothered by it, but I'm with you, JB. I will be.
What was I going to say about the rules and what you... Oh, I think that, like, Ricochet... I'm about to say what he said, because Ricochet's going to be here every week, and Logan Paul is. And so I think they wanted fans to just... Like, they wanted to convey to fans, you know, don't give up on Ricochet. He wasn't defined down. He was cheated out of a win by a heel. To put a little bit of heat on Logan, maybe justify a rematch eventually, but also just kind of let people know, hey, Ricochet lost, but did he really lose? You know, should it really define him down? So maybe there's a little bit of that, but you are drawing attention to the fact that, you know, people in WWE, they can fight, and then you have an absurd ending, and nothing's really resolved, and it makes a lot of the matches you look forward to seem kind of silly if so many of them are going to end in such a farcical way, whether it's the Tribal Combat match or just, you know, blatant interference and people just move on. We didn't bring up Becky Lynch at all and Zoe Stark and Trish. What'd you think about what they did with Becky tonight, Chris?
I think this is what they did when they have a placeholder because the match is a week from now. They didn't want Becky Lynch to wrestle. So they, you know, I always joke with Raw sometimes. It's like Adam Pearce should be really happy that wrestlers come to the ring because he would have only had two matches.
I know.
people didn't come out. Though he had the New Day as a surprise. He had that.
Yeah.
He didn't have a main event. He didn't have a women's match. But I think they needed a reason to have a match and really set up something down the line between Becky and Shayna Baszler. But from her standpoint, it was more sort of like, well, I'm going to beat Trish next week and Zoe Stark won't be there. And it was just kind of really a placeholder with Trish not there.
I want to point out, and I almost forgot, the dumbest line of the night from Michael Cole. It was fun to hear Cole and Barrett, you know, together for 3 hours on Raw. It's the change scenery is fine. And that's just fine. But Michael Cole going, one of the things that makes me really excited to be on Raw every week now is to get to see the Viking Raiders kick ass. I'm like, no, that's not why you're excited to be on Raw. Nobody's excited about the Viking Raiders. We don't want to see another vignette with them talking spooky stuff and all. You know, we're not spooky. That's more House of Black stuff. But, you know, the menacing type thing. I mean, I don't think their vignette was bad, but tonight. But for Cole to say, yeah, one of the reasons I'm excited to be here is that. Like, there's nobody who tunes into Raw going, I really like Mondays instead of Fridays because the Viking Raiders are going to kick some butt. And then they go out and they just lose in a few minutes to, like, 5 minutes to the New Day. So I don't know why Cole had that line. But, you know, it's one of those credibility crushers when an announcer just says something so blatantly ludicrous because it's just not believable that Cole's excited about it and it doesn't reflect how the Viking Raiders actually have been doing. Just over a year ago, the Viking Raiders beat New Day on SmackDown. It has not been a great journey for them since then on this rematch a year and a week later with now New Day beating them. So I don't know. I don't know if that jumped out to you at all, but that was a little bit of an eye roll.
Yeah, well, first of all, I like to say I called the Viking Raiders Super Bowl 11, which was the Vikings versus the Raiders, for those of you NFL fans out there.
I think they could have called them the Packer Raiders tonight just to get some heat in Minneapolis. But anyway. So.
Yeah, I mean, they made them look really bad. They have a vignette, and they're in the dark somewhere being really scary. But the promotion has set them up to be in a surprise match. They'll take on anyone, and out comes a tag team that beats them pretty convincingly. So it really makes them look bad. You know, the Viking Raiders, formerly War Machine in Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I've watched them wrestle many years ago in Ring of Honor shows, and I was really hopeful in WWE that they could get maybe a better push when they went to the main roster because they're very talented. But I think the Viking Raiders is such a sort of ridiculous gimmick that there's a ceiling for them, and they're really not able to bust through that. And so they end up in the situation that they were in today.
Chris, is there anything else in your notes or on your mind about Raw tonight before we sign up?
No, I just want to say thank you. For inviting me on to be a co-host. And I really appreciate all the callers and all the people who emailed in.
Well, you were great. We got to do this again. It's great talking to you here on the show. And yeah, I enjoyed our conversation. I hope I'm confident the listeners did too. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, listeners. Thanks, callers. Thanks, emailers. We will talk to you tomorrow on the flagship, so be sure to send your questions in. For that, Greg Parks joining me for our Blue Logo Show. Search Wade Keller and subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show and the Blue Logo Show. And then also, I'll be by after Dynamite on Wednesday. Check out pwtorch.com for collision ratings. We should have those soon. And that is going to be fascinating to see how they did up against SummerSlam. And check out pwtorch.com every day anyway for a lot of great comments from a lot of great contributors. We'll talk to you all next time. Thank you, everybody.